Good afternoon. We're about to begin our traditional post-shareholder meeting briefing. Just now, the first board of directors meeting took place. Viktor Zubkov has been elected as the chairman of the board of directors. Deputy chairman of the board of directors, Alexei Miller. This press conference we're going to hold in our traditional format. So I suggest that, again, following the tradition, the first question should be forwarded to Dmitry Zubkov, and thereafter we shall follow the Q&A routine. Dmitry Torov, please. Viktor Alexeyevich, first of all, my congratulations with the election to such a high position, and with your permission, I have a question. It is quite evident today that having vehicles transformed into consuming the gas motor fuel is both economical and very safe. So what kind of measures the gas industry is currently undertaking in order for the automobile owners to be more active to switch over to this particular type of fuel? Thank you. Yes, thank you for your congratulations, and thank you for this question, because indeed one should say that we ought to think about our environment, and we should also think about the fact that maybe in a few years' time the oil reserves may start diminishing, and maybe in about 28, 30 years, as experts say, it may run out completely at the kind of pace that we see oil currently is being produced. And so what will happen then? What are we going to travel by then? Hundreds and millions of automobiles. So we in Gazprom, together with Alexei Miller, 4 years ago, we set up a company, Gazprom Gas Motor Fuel Company, which is a subsidiary of sorts, which is currently actively developing and building the state-of-the-art fueling stations. And 90% of equipment at these fueling stations come from Russian manufacturers, almost everything, both compressors and fueling pistols, you name it. So it is really very beneficial environmentally. And Vladimir Putin, the president of the country, has several times mentioned it, saying that the future in Russia is with the gas motor fuel, switching over to the natural gas. One thing is that it's very environmentally friendly. There are no unfriendly exhausts. But moreover, this is the most economical type of a fuel. Nothing other than that. And so the type of vehicles which are driven by electricity, you know, there are such as well. First, you have to produce this electricity. You have to burn something, be it coal, be it some kind of other, the same gas. And we're talking about gas, about natural gas, methane, and liquefied natural gas, which today is not only the most environmentally friendly, but also the most economic ones. So the average price at the gasoline stations, at the fueling stations, we already have about 300 of them, is 13.70, I mean, 14 rubles. You know, and I can tell you the following thing. We're not really doing a good job out of popularizing, promoting this most economic, most environmentally friendly, the safest kind of the type of a fuel. No, we're not doing a good job, really. And I am being critical of the managers who are supervising this area. One of these days, together with the governor of the Rostov region, We, Vasily Golubev, in the city of Aksai, we were inaugurating a new gas fueling station. I came to one of the drivers and I asked him, so how's it going? And he said, Viktor Alexeyevich, right now, per 1 kilometer of my mileage, I'm spending 1 ruble. And I said, and how much did you spend when you used to buy gasoline? Before that, 5 rubles. You see the kind of savings, 100 rubles per 100 kilometers and 1,000 rubles per 1,000 kilometers is what people are spending right now. But where are we hearing about it from? No, we're not being outspoken enough. The most economic type of a fuel. Although a few years ago, you know, there was a slight concern that it's not the safest way to fuel a vehicle using natural gas. And what it happens is that with state-of-the-art compressors, with state-of-the-art fueling stations, and the silicon composite tanks, it makes it a totally safe kind of a vehicle. I mean, the composite tank. So we believe that we should carry this work forward related to the building of fueling stations offering gas motor fuels. There is a lot of future in it. We've got a program on our hands, and by 2020, we will build 500 such modern fueling stations. But there is no consumer. Why? In all of the countries which are developing this kind of fueling, they're offering subsidies. The governments are offering subsidies. Why? Particularly through the startup period, because the production of vehicles to use the gas motor fuels is not big enough. There are not many of such vehicles, and so the industry is not yet capable of offering the kind of price for the gas fuel as in terms of the number of vehicles which consume traditional fuels, just a few thousands of them. So subsidies are necessary, and there's not enough of these subsidies. They have to be raised. So this is the first issue. Now, the second issue, real consumers. And what I'm saying is that for a business who has to pay out of its pocket, such business really is becoming aware. These are taxi cabs, private drivers, small and medium businesses who in certain cities are really switching over to gas in big numbers by the network of the gas fueling stations, although we build them every year, is not enough in terms of its coverage, because apart from Gazprom, is effectively nobody is involved in this effort. Although there are other regions where, you know, how do we say it, which is not within the intermediate area of our coverage. They're covered by other independent companies who operate there, but they also have to really catch on actively. So there wouldn't be just 500 fueling stations, but thousands of fueling stations, and then it would be much easier to start producing more of the automobiles driven by gas and have more of such fueling stations and consequently broaden the number of such consumers. And the last thing, it takes time to build a contemporary fueling stations. As a minimum, one should need a full year just to first do a design work and then do some land allocation and then commission. You know, in one of the regions we tried it as an experiment. So this is something which is really very important for the rural areas. And so there was a case where we built a moving fueling station. You know, it really was not an expensive, about 20, 25 million rubles. And so this kind of a fueling complex can be connected to the gas pipelines and gas piping within 2 weeks. while the businesses which started buying such fuel, they already counted that 100 units of vehicles which in the course of 12 months are going to be fueled by such a moving fueling station would create the savings of 120 million rubles a year. You can imagine the kind of colossal reserves, particularly for the agriculture, are being tapped into by expanding the number of such moving fueling stations, especially for the cases where there are already several established consumers in any location, so are ready to work in order to meet such a demand. And so we think this to be something with a lot of future potential. We are going to continue this work, and this will significantly reduce the cost of the delivery of cargo, which will never produce a negative effect upon the cost of goods supplied. So I've quoted to you the statistics and the figures, and I am of the opinion that this is a really high potential opportunity, and we will continue working on it. Thank you. Dear colleagues, Dmitry Alexeyevich has another meeting scheduled, so let us give him a big round of applause for his participation in this press conference, and we shall continue then in his absence. Thank you. Today, during the main presentation to the shareholders' meetings, a lot of attention was paid to the work the company does in the European market, and we see that our results and our plans in Europe do raise a very strong interest broadly amongst a great number of countries, not only located in Europe, but also in other continents. And specifically, I am aware that Nikkei agency from Japan, represented by Dmitry Bandura, would like to ask a question about it. Yes, good afternoon. Thank you very much for the opportunity to ask a question. Based on the terms of an agreement with the European Commission, based on the antitrust investigation, the European consumers effectively have been given the right to directly influence prices. And so this is no longer an issue of your relationship with the consumers, but this is something that has been institutionalized in Europe. Could you please explain, why did you accept it? Why did you agree to it? Does it mean that certain priorities will have to be, adjusted and changed from the price stability, let's say, over to at least making sure that there is a finite market share that you may have, expecting the competition in Europe to grow because of different reasons, and including because of the LNG supplies, and how these agreements may affect the future demand for your gas in Europe and for your gas prices. Thank you. Thank you for the question. Well, in the first place, I would like to say that the agreement in no way affects pricing because of the simple reason that the agreement doesn't set the pricing. This agreement does not regulate the issue of the volumes of our gas supply either, and does not regulate our share in the European Union market. You know that the agreement has successfully passed through the market assessment, and this is being testified to by the growing demand for the Russian gas this year. We, during the first half of this year, have set an historic record, which is 101.2 billion cubic meters of gas. The demand for the Russian gas has been growing stably in the European market. No change of priorities have taken place in Gazprom. Our priority has been and shall remain completely fulfilling all of our contractual commitments that we take before our European consumers in full volumes and on time. Thank you. Well, and quite naturally, in this country, Not only the federal media, but the regional media is similarly interested in the competitiveness that Gazprom has in the European market. And I know that in the region of Stavropolye, people are very keen to find more about it. Andrei Volochka from the Stavropol Pravda. Yes, sir, Alexei Borisovich, I'm here. Thank you for the opportunity to ask a question. I represent Stavropol Pravda newspaper. So my question is about a very vital topic where there is a lot of speculation revolving recently. And so it is as follows. Is the United States capable, or with its LNG, to compete against Russia in the European marketplace? I see. Well, you know, I would like to say that America will never catch up, nor will it take over Russia in the supplies of the liquefied natural gas to the European market. And the reason here, effectively, is that the key thing for consumers is the pricing issue as well as the reliability of supplies. And as far as the pricing is concerned, the price for the pipeline gas will always be below the LNG prices, and specifically the LNG prices for the LNG from the North America. And the reason here is that our fields and our gas production centers are located at a much closer distance than North America. And experts do have respective charts and formulas for the distances at which the liquefied natural gas will never be able to compete against the pipeline gas. And so the kind of distances that we are away from the European market to our gas production centers are exactly the ones which enable the Russian pipeline gas to always be and remain competitive in the European market. And within the current period, you are aware that the prices for American LNG are simply dozens of percentages higher than the Russian pipeline gas. And moreover, the share of the American LNG, as you know, is very petty in the European market, altogether just 0.5%. But in as far as the overall future is concerned, let me repeat it again, America will never catch up and will never take Russia over in as far as this issue is concerned. Today in the presentation, it was already stated that the competitiveness of the Russian market is not only in pricing, but also in the flexibility of supply. And I know that Anastasia Gorbeva from Argos Media Agency wants to raise a question specifically about it, and I think her question is about the European underground gas storages. Yes, Anastasia Tigora from Argos Media. Gazprom right now has more than 5 billion of active gas in the underground European storages. I mean, the Gazprom's own storage capacities. But is Gazprom planning to expand its own underground storage capacities in Europe? If positive, by how much and by which year, please? Thank you. Well, indeed, we do have our own capacities in the European underground storages, 5 billion cubic meters of gas. But in as far as the past winter is concerned and the autumn winter period between 2017 to 2018, we had the volumes of 8.6 billion cubic meters of gas. And essentially, without doubt, that has played an important role in helping Europe to pass through the winter peak, which fell upon the end of February, the end of January, beginning of February, whereby gas from the underground storage facilities, which where Gazprom is involved, and the gas into which Gazprom injected itself, made its contribution into supporting and meeting that kind of the peak demand that we registered. And it is true that in the market, very serious events were unfolding from the point of view of a dramatic daily demand spikes. Almost within 13 days from February 18th until the beginning of March, until the 2nd of March, the daily demand growth was simply galloping. And in the course of this period of time, we were able to increase our daily supplies by almost 20%. And you know that almost every day in the course of 10 days in a row, we were achieving absolutely historic records. And on March 2nd, we reached the final historic record of daily supplies into the European market, 713.4 million cubic meters a day. Once again, I shall underscore that the contribution from the underground storage facilities where Gazprom is participating, as well as the gas which had been injected by Gazprom into the European underground storage, it made their contributions. Now, in as far as the specific level is concerned, as I said, by the beginning of the gas takeoff period, we had 8.6 billion cubic meters of gas, and our purpose-specific level is to have 5% of the European underground storage facilities, 5% from the exportable volumes. And as I said today, we are reaching the level of about 200 billion cubic meters of gas a year. Of our gas supplies into Europe and to remote abroad, and so respectively, 5% makes it about 10 billion cubic meters of gas. You know, some of the correspondents whose specialty is the gas industry are trying to compete against us in their depth of knowledge about the company. One of them is Alexei Novikov, and I know that he also has a question to raise. Oh, great, many thanks. Good afternoon, Alexei Borisovich. Just recently, some of the European consumers were not taking off the contracted amounts, but they were taking off contracted amounts below the take-or-pay levels. Is there a different situation right now? I mean, the supplies are growing, and we are trying to take over the new historical level of 200 billion cubic meters of gas a year. Well, quite clearly, we are now nearing a different threshold in terms of the ceiling of the annual contractual volumes. And we see that with some of the consumers, contracts already have been updated in terms of the volumes. For example, Serbia, Austria, since long, has hit through the threshold of the annual contracted volumes. You also mentioned the first few days of March when the prices, and all through the winter, I guess the European spot prices were considerably above the contractual Gazprom prices that we could see in the public sources. So certain prerequisites are there in terms of the objective review of contracts on the Russian side, I mean. And of quite a significant margin. But on the other hand, the transportation contracts expire next year in terms of quite a number of destinations. Yamal, Europe, Ukrainian corridor, new gas transportation routes are being commissioned into operation. So it's a bit of an interim period, a turning point, a pivoting period that is emerging for the company. So how could you describe the plans that the company may have in terms of this forthcoming negotiations campaign period? Yes, a very deep knowledge indeed of the subject matter. Well, you know, in as far as the annual contractual volumes are concerned, well, we've been just saying that we are reaching the level of the 2018 export volumes of about 200 billion cubic meters of gas. But let us take a look at this figure with a bit of a more scrutiny, speaking about the annual contract volumes. During first half of the year, 102.1 billion cubic meters of gas already have been delivered. Now the question is, how much are we going to export in the second half of the year? During the past 3 years, the volumes of gas supplies in the second half of the year in exports were above the first half year from 1.5 billion in the range of 1.5 to 6.5 billion cubic meters. So simple calculus will show that 102 multiplied by 2 and every at his own discretion may add up a figure from 1.5 to 6.5 billion cubic meters. Apparently, we together may come up to a figure of 205 billion and more, and 205.3 billion cubic meters of gas makes it the maximum annual contract volumes by Gazprom, and absolutely in terms of all of the export contracts, in as far as the remote destination, export destinations are concerned. And we are being quite mindful and watching your publications about the gas markets. We are familiar with the outlooks that you issue covering the market. And I remember very well the kind of articles which appeared after Gazprom recovered its historic record in 2017, 194.4 billion cubic meters. So the printed media experts were saying and were writing, well, i.e. the level may remain, but the total volume probably will be less than what it was in 2017. But if it will be more, then just by a slight margin. But the kind of the demand growth that we are registering today is characterized by very high pace, almost 6% incremental during H1, 5.5 billion cubic meters of gas is what we already see as the additional volume. And so with this in mind, I would like to say that nowhere in any analytical materials, in no forecast in the printed media, I could see a single outlook who would say that based on the results of 2018, Gazprom may achieve the volume of exports which will correspond to the maximum contractual volumes pertaining to absolutely all of the contracts which are effective. There was no outlook or forecast like that offered. But the market is demonstrating to us exactly what I'm describing to you. So I would like to say it right here and now, that apparently, and that is indeed the case without doubt, that the ability to achieve the contractual annual contract volumes is not a limitation at all. No, this is not the case. But the ability to achieve the maximum level of the annual contract volumes with respect to all of the annual contracts in totality is without doubt a new system of coordinates, the kind of a new system of coordinates that one should really digest within this period of time. You also stated that considering the Yamal-Europe and the Ukrainian corridor, there emerges, as you said, a bit of an interim pivoting period. One can agree with that. And I believe that this pivoting period should not be 2019, but the period of time in between 2019 to 2020, in December 31st of 2019 and the 1st of January 2020. And specifically, that is the period of time when we would see the gas supplies to Ukraine as a contract expiring. The transit contract to the Ukrainian territory would expire by then. With our Belarusian friends, we should sign an extension of the contract for the supplies of gas to Belarus and decide on the principles of pricing for the period of up to 2020 to 2025. In March 2020, the gas transportation agreement for the Yamal-Europe section, the Polish section, is expiring. The planned figures of commissioning into operation of the Nord Stream 2 is the end of 2019. The commissioning into operation of the first and the second section of the Turkish Strait, the end of 2019. The start of the supplies of gas into China through the Power of Siberia pipeline, the 20th of December 2019. And I believe that one should agree that this is a pivoting period. But for this pivoting period, we also have this new system of coordinates that is superimposed upon, that we mentioned. For this period, pivoting period, we see a situation being superimposed that Gazprom, within the current period, is performing on all of its commitments within the, all of the export contracts in their full entirety. And so I believe that if one is to speak about 2019, you may describe 2019, bearing in mind the great number of new gas transportation facilities being commissioned into operation. You may describe that year as the one which defines, which predetermines many things in terms of the terms and conditions that we would need to comply with within the immediate future. In this answer, we heard the issue being raised about the commissioning operation of the Nord Stream 2. Nadezhda Rodova, representing the S&P Global Platts, constantly participating in our press conference, unfortunately wasn't able to attend, but she's watching and listening to us. And she asked me to, on her behalf, to raise the question, what is the volume of gas that Gazprom will be able to transport through Nord Stream 2 in 2020, bearing in mind the fact that the recipient German pipeline by that point in time plans to commission operation, to commission into operation only half of the expected capacities, of the design capacities. Well, the design capacity of the Nord Stream 2 pipeline is 55 billion cubic meters of gas. Now, the area of accountability and the task which has always been there and is currently being there for UGOL is to reconcile and synchronize the commissioning into operation of all of the joining capacities. It has been there, it is there, and it shall remain, because the UGAL project is implemented in the German territory, and certainly the issue of the timing for commissioning into operation of any capacities is the area of accountability of our German colleagues. To further extend the Nord Stream 2 topic, I know that Russia 24 also wanted to ask a question. Yulia Makarova, please.
Hello, Alexei Borisovich. Could you please tell us when the laying of the pipeline will start, bearing in mind the fact that Denmark hasn't yet issued its permit?
The laying down of the marine section of the Nord Stream 2 pipeline will commence strictly according to the schedule in the summer of this year. All of the permits for the construction and the operation of the pipeline have been received from Germany, Sweden, and Finland. Yes, there is an issue with getting a permission from Denmark. But there is also a plan of how this issue will be dealt with. All right, let's go southward. Turkish Stream. Yevgenia Sokolova, please.
Good afternoon, Alexei Borisovich, Yevgenia Sokolova, TASS News Agency. I have several questions about the Turkish Stream project. Could you please tell us what will be the routing of the second line of this project for the European consumers? Is there any chance that this line will go through Bulgaria? We already know the date when the supplies of gas will start into China. Could you also quote the date of this sort for Turkey? And longer term, is there a possibility that a direct line will be built through the Black Sea towards Bulgaria, and considering the future growth of the Turkish market, that the Turkish stream will only be used for Turkey, while the European destinations will be supplied through the Bulgaria only? Thank you. Yes, as far as the routing is concerned. The Turkish stream, and that is the marine-based pipeline, which starts on the Russian Black Sea coast and respectively goes to the reception terminal in KK in Turkey. So this is the Turkish stream route. But in as far as the gas streaming flow chart is concerned for the gas that is going to be streamed through the marine-based pipeline currently in Bulgaria, in Serbia and Hungary, decisions have been made to develop national gas transportation grids. And consequently, Bulgaria made a decision to develop the Bulgarian gas transportation network. And this is the area of accountability of the Bulgarian gas transportation operator and Bulgarian regulator. And one should mention here that these decisions have been made in strict compliance with the currently effective European energy legislation. Therefore, gas through the Turkish stream in the beginning of 2020, after the Turkish stream will reach its design throughput capacity, may go through the gas transportation systems, respectively, of Bulgaria, Serbia, and Hungary. So, in terms of the precise date, I won't be able to quote it to you like I could in the case of the Power of Siberia, which is December 20th, 2019, but I'm absolutely confident that the commissioning and operation of the first and the second line of the Turkish stream will take place before the end of 2019. And you know that the first line of the Turkish stream has already been built. Now, in as far as the possibility in the future to build a pipeline directly from the Russian territory through the Black Sea towards Bulgaria is concerned, the Turkish stream, using it just for the needs of the Turkish market. Well, you know that last year we reached the maximum volumes of gas deliveries to Turkey, 29 billion cubic meters of gas. Today we're talking about the annual contract volumes and the annual contract volumes under our contracts with Turkey, 30 billion cubic meters of gas. So bearing in mind the design capacity of one line within the Turkish stream, 1575, we understand that the design capacity is a little bit in excess of 50%. Now, you know, to be able to anticipate that within a very short period of time, the Turkish market will grow by additional 50%, I think that could only be, you know, super and overly optimistic kind of an expectation. Without doubt, Turkish market is bound to grow, but not at such a pace as to ask a question about both lines of the Turkish stream to be solely supplying the Turkish market. The direct pipe towards Bulgaria. Well, a direct pipe towards Bulgaria, you know, this is the South Stream project. And Bulgaria, some time ago, stopped this project itself. And you know that we had to sustain financial losses. And as far as this issue is concerned, we are still going through the arbitration proceedings. And we certainly do not want this kind of a situation to repeat itself. And therefore, if even it is possible to build a direct pipeline to Bulgaria through the Black Sea, then without doubt these will have to be
very firm, 100% guarantees from the European Commission and Bulgaria put together.
Well, as much as we do not want to really touch upon the Ukrainian topic, but alas, we cannot. So RIA Novosti had a question about it.
Good afternoon, Alexei Borisovich. My question is this. The Stockholm arbitration ruling, not only it has really put things straight between Naftogaz and Gazprom, it only complicated this relationship further. The conflict and disputes are being raised and claims being initiated. So how do you see a way out of these situations, and also taking into account the fact that certain volumes of transit through Ukraine post-2019 will remain and the companies will have to come to certain terms? How do you see the future development of relationship with Naftogaz, how Gazprom is going to act on this? And another question, do you believe that the tripartite negotiations format should remain around these gas contracts, or all the contractual terms should exclusively be reached and agreed upon by two sides only?
Well, you know that yesterday the government, Swedish Appellate Court, confirmed its order to stop the implementation of the Stockholm arbitration ruling with respect to the transit contract. Our respective claim was raised following the order of the Swedish government appellate court, so this claim was rejected and the order was confirmed. And so as of today, nobody has to enact the Stockholm arbitration ruling with respect to the transit contract. And so the ruling by the Stockholm arbitration court pertaining to two contracts, the supply contract and the transit contract, you know, it was asymmetrical and came to very seriously breach the balance of interests between the parties. And Gazprom, you know, not to exacerbate this disbalance, and specifically that goes for the possibility of the new penalties and fines covering 2018-2019 in case the Stockholm arbitration award, because of some reason, shall remain effective, submitted a new claim, a new to terminate within the current period of time the currently effective contracts, the gas supply contract into Ukraine and the contract for the transit of gas through the Ukrainian territory. And I would like to inform you that right now there is a arbitration tribunal being put together for the Stockholm arbitration to consider and review the Gazprom's claim aimed at severing the currently effective two contracts I referred to. Now, in as far as the way you worded your question, to find a way out of the situation and how the future relationships should be developed or built. Well, first of all, by all means, the balance of interests between the parties must be regained. But how can it be achieved? Either this would be a change or a recall and cancellation of the Stockholm arbitration ruling by the Court of Appellate. Or maybe Ukraine would come with certain constructive proposals. In the meantime, no constructive proposals from Ukraine we have heard of. The process of recovering the balance of interest between the parties
is the condition for negotiations to proceed further. And of course, Ukraine must present validation of an economic viability for the gas to be transited through its territory. You raised a question about the tripartisan meeting. Well, one should say that in terms of tripartisan negotiations, there haven't been such negotiations ever. There have been tripartisan consultations between the Russian and Ukrainian core ministries and the European Commission. Tripartisan consultations took place in the past, so quite probably they may also happen in the future as well. And where is Ludmila Potapeteva from RBK? And she says, oh, there you are. I know that you also had a question about Ukraine. Yes, Alexei Borisovich, thank you very much. Could you please say whether Gazprom has ever asked for or is asking, you know, for any financial assistance from other legal entities because of the risk of the Gazprom's assets being arrested abroad and, generally speaking, related to this dispute with Ukraine? It would be good to understand what kind of an assistance it is all about, considering the fact that Naftogaz stated that it will never stop its efforts to refute this decision, which is currently is an obstacle for them to continue with the seizure of Gazprom's assets abroad. No, we never asked for any help or any assistance. And so, bearing in mind the ruling that the state appellate court in Sweden brought into effect, so it confirmed its ruling to stop the implementation of the Stockholm arbitration award with respect to the gas transit contract through Ukraine, and so respectively, the significance or the there's no issue in terms of the assets being arrested right now. But of course, we are aware that the appellate court ruling is an injunction, and that is just something that stops the execution of the Stockholm arbitration award. So there has to be a further consideration which should take place based on the merits of the case, and then we will see what will be happening. Yes, now let's go eastward. The Star of Altai, Galina Mironova, I know that she wants to ask a question about the Eastern Project. Yes, Galina Mironova, the Star of Altai newspaper, the Republic of Altai. Good afternoon. Thank you very much for the possibility to ask a question which are worrying the people living in our region. Is there any discussion about the future of the power of Siberia future, meaning having the Altai gas pipeline making part of it, or is it not an issue? Well, you know that as far as the power of Siberia 2 is concerned and the Altai gas pipeline is concerned, we have signed with our Chinese counterparts the main terms and conditions for the supplies of gas, and as far as certain items within this particular contracts are concerned, these are the legally binding ones, actually, I should say. And I would like to inform you that the question of this particular project is being discussed at every meeting with the CNPC executives, and these meetings do take place regularly, so these negotiations are ongoing. And as you how did you say it, how did you describe them? Well, I mean, this issue is not closed. Yes, it's not closed at all. Negotiations are still continuing. And so, taking into account the fact that we see that the Chinese market is the most dynamic of evolving in the world, and today during the shareholders' meeting, we also noted the growing pace of the demand for gas in China compared to 2016 and 2017. The volume of consumption of gas in China grew by 15% and reached the level of 237 billion cubic meters of gas. With that, the goals set by China are to achieve the share of gas in the energy mix in Russia from 7 to 10%, which means that in some immediate future, gas may reach the figure of 360 billion cubic meters of gas a year. And so based on our midterm forecast by 2035, the need to supply the Russian pipeline gas into China may be in between 80 to 110 billion cubic meters of gas. Previously, we quoted the figure 100. Today, it is already 110. And just for comparison's sake, as far as the nature of this figure is concerned, the supplies of gas through the Power of Siberia 2 through the Altai gas pipeline is something that we also include in these forecasts. All right, let's continue the eastward topics. Vitalia Sokolova, a few questions I know she wanted to raise. Yes, good afternoon, Alexei Borisovich. My questions is not really about the east of the Russia, but the Chinese topics. You are continuing to debate with your Chinese counterparts another project, which is the supply of the pipeline gas from the far east of Russia. When one should expect the signing of a contract in as far as these supplies are concerned, and so what is the time frame, what are the volumes involved? And also during your presentation during the shareholders meeting and now during the briefing, you mentioned that the future potential of the Russian pipeline exports into China would be 110 billion cubic meters of gas into China by 2035. If you counted the Power of Siberia, 38 billion cubic meters of gas, the east route is 30, and if I remember correctly, last year the estimates were 8 billion cubic meters of gas from the Far East, so that is altogether a little bit less than 80. So what will be the additional routes or gas resources that the exports may, you know, reach up to the volume of 110 billion cubic meters of gas? Thank you. Let's see. Yes, it is true that last year we signed with CNPC the basic terms and conditions for the supplies of gas from the Russian Far East. We do not have any strict date mentioned that we otherwise would have given ourselves by which we would plan to sign a contract, because work over the contract is continuing. Now, in as far as, you know, continuing to talk about this particular issue, 80 billion, 110 billion cubic meters of the supplies of the Russian pipeline gas, well, you know, I think that in the first place one should say that Gazprom, with respect to the already concluded contract with China, and in as far as the future ones are concerned, Gazprom is going to deliver its gas not from specific fields, but from the Russian Federation gas transportation system. And we are selling gas, and we will continue gas at the border between Russia and China from the gas transportation system. Undoubtedly, the main resource base for the Chinese supplies will be the East Siberia, the Far East, including the offshore resources and the Gazprom's reserves within the kind of license areas that we have in that region. 5.8 trillion cubic meters of gas, as you understand, makes it some very serious volumes available of the gas reserves. But we also know about these gas production hubs, Yakutia, Irkutsk, and Sakhalin. So without doubt, in as far as the Power of Siberia 2 is concerned, that would be using the resource base from the western Siberia, but the resource base there is even more significant. It's simply humongous there. Now, in as far as specific volumes and the way you estimated 38 plus 30. Well, yes, in as far as our contract with China is concerned to supply gas through the Power of Siberia, 38 billion. Within the main terms, through the Power of Siberia 2, it is 30 billion. Now then, in as far as the Far East is concerned, you quoted the figure of 8. The final figure will certainly be defined in the contract. Let me not try and give you a pre-taste of what the final agreement may be, but I can tell you that a different figure is currently being considered, not 8 billion. And we certainly will continue to operate in the Asian market, and specifically
with China based on the principles that gas first has to be sold and then it has to be produced, and afterwards gas transportation capacities should be put in place. And that is the way we work within the Power of Siberia. We first signed a contract to supply 38 billion, and after that we started developing various facilities, infrastructure in the Kavikta and China fields, and starting to build the strong pipeline, the Power of Siberia. And once we take on the commitments on the volumes and as to the time frame within which these volumes are to be delivered, I can definitely tell you that these fields are going to be developed and the resource base is going to be ready on time, and new gas transportation capacities will be made available. And so I believe that only with respect to the new projects that have been mentioned, one should additionally comment by saying that, principally speaking, there is also a possibility to ramp up further our Chinese destination supplies in the future and use the gas transportation corridor, which is the Power of Siberia. And this is the possibility that we are not ruling out. This is something that we also keep in mind. All right, let us continue the topic of future projects. Artur Toprakov, please. Thank you. Alexei Borisovich, my question is about the possibility of monetizing the resources of the gigantic Tambay field, because the company used to say that it's considering both the possibility of feeding it into the single transportation system as well as liquefaction. And so if we talk about comparing possible optionalities, what kind of liquefaction capacities we may consider within this particular production cluster? Thank you. Well, it is true that it really makes it an important issue. Why? Because the reserves of the Tambay Group right now, they're simply gigantic. You know that last year we grew the reserves in the Tambay Group by 5 trillion cubic meters of gas. So the total reserves are 7.7 trillion cubic meters of gas. So that makes it a planetary kind of figure. The volume is twice more than the global annual gas consumption. So certainly there comes up a question with respect to how one could monetize these resources. And so within the current period, we are considering different optionalities. Some of them you mentioned in your question, but within the current period of time, we don't have any final opinion. Now, when it may come, I believe that it may be decided before the end of 2018. So I think that right here and now, to be able to talk about any correlation of gas in the single transportation, unified transportation system, natural gas, liquefied natural gas, it's a bit premature. But without doubt, something that is really worth mentioning is that taking into account the reserves of the Tambay Group, the Yamal Gas Production Center for Gazprom transforms into the biggest gas production center in the Russian Federation. Yes, let us continue the LNG project topic. I know that NTV channel had a question about it. Yes, good afternoon, Ilya Fedosov, NTV. What is the current phase of the Baltic LNG project? How it is developing further? And are there any negotiations taking place with potential new partners? If positive, then could you describe the status? Well, the Baltic LNG status, first of all, it is completion of the feasibility study. Within the current period of time, this is the pre-project phase, which will be completed before the end of the year. The next step will be the technical concept, the design concept, in as far as the time frame to commission this project into operation, it will be 2023. The design capacity, 10 million tons of throughput. And this is the first stage. As far as the project participants are concerned, in the first place, one should mention that within the current period of time, we are working with Shell Company to set up a joint venture. Within the current period of time, we are working on this. interest is being demonstrated towards this project by a big number of companies representing different global regions. But I suppose that I would like to specifically mention a very strong interest from the Japanese companies, including the companies which are the current shareholders in the Sakhalin 2 project. And there is another question about LNG. I know that Elena Barkova from Primorsk region has a question to ask. Alexei Borisovich, a year ago you stated that Gazprom is going back to the Vladivostok LNG project, but in a new format to produce the motor fuels for the Vladivostok marine port. Today, an international standards governing the way the Russian vessels berth in the foreign marine port are becoming stricter and stricter. The Golden Horn port is something that one can view as an example of what is happening when this project will ultimately be fulfilled. Because I think that if Gazprom is not to rush, then in 2 or 3 years in the Asia-Pacific market, this gas motor fuel market for the marine vessels will be completely closed because it is growing and developing at such an enormously fast pace. Yes, sir, thank you very much. Indeed, we made up our minds to really further work on the Vladivostok LNG project. And when was it? 12 months ago, we used to mention it. And so we do observe the kind of a situation that you very concisely but very eloquently described. Indeed, there is big potential within this particular segment. So with respect to the project itself, I shall tell you that we're currently validating the investment requirements, speaking about the start of the construction. That will be 2020. And it would also be necessary to put together the full sort of design, so it won't be possible to begin the construction phase before 2020. But I can tell you that in as far as positioning of Gazprom in the market is concerned, the company is not going to be late. It's not going to be a latecomer, definitely. And this is being confirmed by the work we do with the companies which, amongst other things, are providing for this particular demand. And here I mean our work with the Japanese companies. And to be more specific, I can tell you that we've signed an agreement with Mitsui Company on working with Vladivostok LNG project. And within this period of time, work in this project is being done together with this company. There is another question I know from the Mariinskaya Pravda, Sergei Druzhinin. Yes, Sergei Druzhinin from Mariinskaya Pravda newspaper, the Republic of Mariel. Alexei Borisovich, what are the specialties or professional competences going to be sought after by your company, and who out of the young people who are currently to choose their future professions in the future will stand a better chance to find employment in Gazprom? You know, Gazprom knows its needs very well in terms of the new generation and new employees, and is very well aware of the kind of competences and professions that it may require, not only about the professions, but within which projects as well. And that really comes from the way we organize our work, because the 10-year program we have, and we are reviewing it every year. And today, our program is 2018 to 2027. Within the 10-year program, we are, you know, cutting off every year which has gone into the past, and we add to it a new year, and respectively make a decision as to what kind of additional new project which might enter into our 10-year program. And the 10-year program is the basic fundamental document which we are governed by when putting together our investment perspective and programs for the next budgetary cycle and for the next 3 years. So the 10-year program includes priority strategic projects for Gazprom. And the foundation underneath this work is the 10-year gas balance, and our experts and the specialists who write about the gas industry, they know that our 10-year gas balance is a main
directing documents, and with a high level of certainty, we know how much gas we will need to produce, what kind of producing capacities we would need to have, and how the produced gas is going to be distributed. And we, consequently, are very well aware of the kind of the production project, gas transportation project, the underground gas storage project within this period of time Gazprom will need to develop. And therefore, the question about professions is the question which we understand very clearly for the next 10 years to come. And I can give you figures. In the course of the next 10 years, Gazprom will recruit young people in the number of 300,000. 100,000 of them will be the graduates of the higher educational institutions. Gazprom, yes, thank you. No, wait a minute. Gazprom works with the 12 leading universities in Russia, which we identify as the supporting educational institutions for Gazprom. And these 12 universities are amongst those who are in the first place training the kind of professionals that Gazprom requires. Now, what kind of specialties these are, I believe that you can really do a bit of a ranking. In the first place, it's engineering and technology specialty for the oil and gas complex, for example, technology, machinery and equipment. Secondly, economics. Thirdly, construction. Fourthly, IT, information technologies. And the fifth here, applied geology, subsurface engineering. But the majority of experts we do require from engineering and technical areas, engineering and technology and economics. And as far as the graduates are concerned from these 12 supporting universities, we enjoy our cooperation with them. We certainly know about how the graduates are finding employment. And so these supporting higher educational institutions for Gazprom, in terms of the gas industry requirements, do offer the highest percentage of professional employment upon graduation, the highest percentage of guaranteed employment, of professional employment amongst all of the universities in Russia. This is the first thing. And second thing, which is not least important, it is specifically in the case of the graduates of such supporting universities and the above-mentioned professional competences, these graduates enjoy the highest starting wages and salaries upon graduation. So, as you may see, this is not only a very big demand for young and well-trained people, but as you can judge, that represents really some very good opportunities for a professional start for such people once they graduate from the Gazprom supporting universities. The president of the Gubkin Oil and Gas University is sitting on the board of directors, so he does know quite well who to prepare, how to train young professionals for us. Angelika Kirillova, State Radio Television Company of Chuvashia. Alexei Borisovich, everyone has already grown used to a slogan of Gazprom, the national treasure. But nothing is standing still. And what kind of motto, what kind of slogan do you believe the company may need for the next 5 to 10 years? Well, the slogan of motto of the Gazprom, the national treasure, you should agree with me that it fully dovetails with the mission of the company, where the mission of the company is something that you know quite well about.
which is the reliable and safe supplies of the consumers in the Russian Federation with gas, and particularly during the winter time, because winters in these countries are quite severe and very long, and our consumers are confident and will remain quite sure that during a very long and severe winter, it will always be warm inside one's home. There will always be gas supplied to homes. And so such slogan as the Gazprom, the national treasure, will remain vital in the course of many, many years to come. Absolutely sure I am of that. Today we've got the most well-represented groups of correspondents in this room representing different regional media. We have attentively looked into the various issues that you are interested in, one way or another. All of them are related to issues of gasification, gas supplies into the regions. These are about different questions, and in every region there are local nuances, local problems, and we without doubt would respond to each of you individually. But there is a whole number of certain principles that Gazprom is guided by in this area, and so I believe it would be only proper for Mr. Miller to tell us about it, because this simultaneously would really respond to a whole series of such questions. Yes, you know, and as far as the gasification issue is concerned, we are having a lot of conversations with the local governments in Russia, the regional governments. We're traveling down to the regions. We are holding meetings. We are meeting with our consumers. And, you know, when I will start answering this set of questions, you know, I would like to start by saying that Gazprom is not setting gas prices. The gas prices on our behalf are being set by the Federal Anti-Monopoly Service, because there are so many questions about gas pricing. So Gazprom is not setting the prices. It's just, you know, in order to once again, you know, just make a statement about it. Now, as far as the gasification program is concerned, you know that this is the program that we started working on as tasked by the President of Russia, Vladimir Putin, in a very active way back in 2005. And over this period of time, a lot has been done. In the first place, one should mention that the level of the gasification in the country grew from 53.3% to 68.1%. So today, we also mentioned it during the general shareholders meeting. And so I believe that the time frame that we are currently identifying and the incremental growth that we're demonstrating from 53.3 to 68.1, I believe that this is something that may be considered as a certain marker, as a certain milestone for the midterm outlook in terms of the future growth of gasification in this country. Now, the money that is being allocated is not small for the period since 2005, 325 billion. Gazprom has invested into this program more than 30,000 kilometers of pipelines have been built. And most importantly, whenever we talk about the problems that we are quoted in the regions, I should say that the gasification program is the program like a two-way street, because this is the Gazprom's program, certainly, but in the first place, this is the program of the regions. And when together with the regions, we act on the gasification program. When together with the regions, we prepare general plans for gas supplies and gasification of the regions. I emphasize specifically these are the regional authorities which propose the settlements and townships which should be gasified. And these are
the regional authorities in the first place set priorities in terms of which districts within these regions should be gasified in the first place. And these priorities in the first place are the regional priorities of the regions. And that is what we are including into our plans. And the priority was allotted to the rural gasification, certainly, and I would like to say that over this period of time, the rural gasification has grown 1.7 times. And today, the gasification overall in the rural areas is 78.7%, which is above the average gasification level throughout the whole country, which we remember in 2005. Now, generally, if we are to talk about the possibility to expedite the pace of gasification in the country, you know that in the first place that is something that is dependent upon the regions. We, unfortunately, every year have to adjust the gasification programs with respect to quite a number of the Russian Federation regions, bringing it downwards. And the reason here is the disability to maintain 100% schedule of the synchronization of operations. Gazprom builds the bypass sections and the inter-village sections to the borders of the townships and settlements, to the borders of the municipalities. That is where our accountability finishes. But in as far as the intra-city, intra-households, intra-township pipelines are concerned, the construction of the boiler facilities, and what is more important, to prepare consumers to receive gas, to take gas, that is the accountability of the regional authorities, which is written in the agreements that Gazprom signs with the Russian regions. So as of 2005, altogether, yes, just about 10 regions of Russia demonstrated 100% fulfillment of their commitments within the program of synchronization of operations. Just 10 regions. Now, in as far as all the rest of the Russian Federation regions were concerned, Gazproms have created the capacities which are not 100% utilized. And without doubt, apart from continuing running joint new project of gasifications, there is a potential in the regions which are lagging behind to finance the gasification program and eliminate the lagging behind which they had without any additional funding allocated by Gazprom. By 100% act on their former commitments and respectively raise the level of gasification in the region. As of 2018, we also decided to follow the path of growing the amounts of funding for the national gasification program, and the volume that Gazprom has allocated for its part of commitment, 36.7 billion rubles. And let me remind you that in 2017, taking into account the adjustments that we had to institute, the amount of funding by Gazprom was 29 billion rubles. And we are hopeful that the amount of funding by Gazprom eventually will be the one that we have planned so far. So without doubt, we are ready in case the regions are eager to further increase the annual volumes of funding for the gasification programs in the Russian regions.
Well, we have been working for almost more than an hour. I believe that we should come to an end. So I would like to thank everybody for the interests, for your participation in this press conference. See you soon, and I believe that soon we're definitely going to see each other.